I've heard some great stories from parents and grandparents about this Christmas, about elves and wish lists. I was reading a couple of letters this afternoon. I like this one. It was one that I think maybe we can relate to. It said, "Dear," this was a small boy. It said, "Dear Santa, there are three little boys who live in our house. There's Jeffrey, he's 2 years old. There's David, he's 4. And there's Norman, he's 7. Jeffrey is good some of the time. And David is good some of the time. But Norman is good all the time. Signed, Norman." And this one, this was kind of one of those ultimatums. It said, "Dear Santa, you didn't bring me much good last year. In fact, you didn't bring me a whole lot of good the year before that. This is your last chance." Signed, Alfred. Hey, let me ask you a question. What is the best Christmas present that you ever had in your life thus far? Just think about it. You don't have to yell it out loud, but just think about the best Christmas present you've ever received. Huh? Tonight we're going to be talking about gifts, and it won't be a surprise that I use the text in the book of Matthew that talks about the Magi, the wise men, who brought gifts to the Christ child. But as we think about gifts this Christmas season, I wanted you to think about the best that you've ever received. And I want you to just answer this silently to yourself. Is it best because of how much it cost? Is it best because of who gave it to you? Is it best because of how it was given? Which one might fit you? Yeah. You know, I believe that it's the people behind the gift that makes a gift special, regardless of what it is. There is probably no one in the world that loves giving gifts more than me. And I won't get any argument from any of my family. A lot of times, you know, I have to look over at Kim and see if I'm telling the truth, and you know how I do that, and wink at her. But I don't even have to look for that kind of comment, because I love Christmas. I got it honestly from my father, but I just love giving. But, you know, as much as I pour into, you know, trying to get right gifts, I'm always hopeful that people are blessed because they can see my heart in giving. Amen? That's the reason. And that's what I want to talk about tonight as we look at this crazy story. And honestly, it's a crazy story about the Magi. We call them wise men. Growing up, we called them kings, right? They weren't really kings, they were king makers. And they were from the Orient, the Persian kingdom. They probably heard the prophecies about Jesus whenever Daniel and fellow Jews were carried off into Babylon and held captive there for most of the rest of their lives. Some actually died there. They were there for 70 years in Babylon, in this kingdom that was not Jewish, and it wasn't a kingdom that believed in the one true God. But it was there that people like Daniel made such an impact upon that culture. You know, he was a stranger in a strange land, but as you know the story of Daniel and the three young Hebrews that were there with him, it was a story about people that were not willing to compromise their faith, right? And because of it, God used them mightily to show himself to others. So I really believe, and most theologians believe, that the people in Babylon and later the Persian kingdom, because that's who conquered Babylon, came to know about the prophecies of Christ because of the Hebrews that were enslaved there for some 70 years. Daniel himself was promoted to be a chief wise man among all those others in the kingdom. And it's because of his integrity and God's blessing upon his life. And so there, Daniel, who was a revealer of dreams, right? Daniel, a revealer of dreams, a revealer of mysteries, a seeker after God's own heart, one that prayed earnestly that God would give him revelation. Daniel was one who would share that revelation with others. So these three, or however many guys that came to Jerusalem, they came following a star, right? It was common belief in that day, in that culture, that when a new king, a powerful king would rise, their star would rise with him. You can look it up in history. It's a common cultural fact. And so these men made a living at searching out mysteries. And they did it mostly through astrology, looking at the stars, and then searching whatever historical records, whatever books that they could find for interpretations or meaning of what they saw. So hearing the prophecies from men like Daniel about Jesus, the Christ that was going to be born, now seeing something unusual in the stars, in the constellations, they noticed it. And in noticing it and searching the scriptures, they believed that this was the sign that a great king was going to be born. And they set out, as you know, to follow that star. As I mentioned, whether there were three or not, we don't know. We usually say three. Why? Because of the three gifts that they brought: gold, frankincense, and myrrh, gifts fit for a king. But they wouldn't have traveled alone. They would have been an entourage. It would have been a caravan that came into Jerusalem that day. The reason I say that is when you read this story in Matthew chapter 2 and just the first 11 verses, you know, the thing that strikes me is why there wasn't more of a stir among God's people that these men had come to town, that this caravan came, that they were coming following something that they truly believed was the announcement of the great king. The Jews would understand the great king's significance because they were looking for the great king that they called the Messiah to come. Why wasn't there more of a stir? Why did so many miss it? Yet these Oriental people, these Persians, these astrologers, these pagans, quite frankly, you know, not believers in the one true God, they saw it. And they saw what others obviously missed. Here's the story. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 through 11. Very quickly, it says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. He had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, the Jewish religious leaders, and asked them where the Christ, the Messiah, would be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has written, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people, Israel. Then it says, Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared, which, by the way, was about or over a year prior to them arriving in Jerusalem. So, by the way, just as a side note, this is why in the next verses we're going to read, Jesus was no longer a swaddled child in the manger. He's an infant, probably a toddler, you know, in a house, still in Bethlehem. And it's the house, of course, that these Magi came to find the Christ child. So it says, after they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense, frankincense, and myrrh. You know, this is an amazing story. We have to look at what in the world is going on. Here's what I want you to think about now. So Jesus is born to a poor family, honestly, who is outcast. They're estranged from their relatives, ashamed by them, because no one would believe that the child that Mary was carrying wasn't Joseph's or, God forbid, somebody else's. So there they were, alone. Really, no money. We know the story from the Luke account, how they went and didn't even find room. Then they stayed and somehow find this house, but still have to be wondering, what's next for us? Well, here's the point. God knew what was next. God understands exactly what we need when we need it. And his timing, while we don't like it, is perfect. While we don't always agree with it, his timing is just at the right time. Amen? Here's the thing. So these magi bring very expensive gifts to the Christ child, right? Just about the time they learn from an angel in a dream that Herod, who had stopped them and they talked to on the way in, now was plotting to kill all the babies in Bethlehem because he was threatened by this new king who would be rising. He was threatened so much that he was willing again, by the way, to commit murder. Herod was no nice man. He had already killed some of his sons who he thought were plotting to overtake him. He was not a good man, a godly man. But God, in his wisdom, sent this star, inspired these astrologers to bring forth exactly what was needed at the time it was needed, because as they, now Joseph and Mary, they had heard also that Herod was seeking to kill the child, God told them to flee into where, church? Egypt. That was no short journey. And who would they find there? How would they live? What would they live on until it was safe for them to return? Guess what? God provided. He provided the right gift at the right time. Gifts that were very elaborate, but gifts that would sustain them through their entire years of Egypt until it was safe for them to return. The wise men were used by God to be able to see something that so many other people could not see. So many others couldn't see what they had seen. How many know that song, "Do You See What I See?" Right? How many have had experiences in their lives where they wonder what God is up to, besides me? When they wonder, you know, God, do you really know what you're doing? Are you really in control? Are you really at work in my life? Are you guiding? Are you leading? Are you bringing into my life the things that you know I need? Sometimes it doesn't seem that way. Sometimes it doesn't seem that God is paying attention. Sometimes we're not looking for the signs that show that He is. Isn't it an amazing principle of God that those who seek Him find Him? How many people do you know this Christmas time that are going to make a big deal about Christmas, but completely, completely leave Jesus out of the picture? I bet you some. It's so easy to do, especially in our day, in our age, in our culture. It's so easy with everything else that Christmas has become, to leave the reason for the season out of the picture. You know what? I wonder how many times in my life that I have missed God's signs, that I have missed His direction because I was not seeking enough. If there's one thing I worry about in my life, probably more than anything else, it's that, missing God. You know what I mean? Missing Him, missing His direction, missing His guidance. Because I know He does. I know He leads. I know that if I can hear His voice, if I can really tap into what He's trying to tell me, how He's trying to lead me, I know everything is going to be okay. I know it. But what if I miss it? What if I miss it? What if I make a mistake? What if I make a decision on my own and it wasn't the decision that God wanted me to make? I worry about those things, don't you? I want to hear from Him. I want to be led by Him. I want to have that peace of knowing He's guiding, He's in control, He's leading. But you know, the principle is He will lead us if we are willing. He will guide us if we are seeking. You ever heard that saying, wise men still seek Him? How true is that? I love that passage in Hebrews that it says that without faith, it's impossible to please God. It says, but those who come to Him must believe that He exists, but that He is also a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. See, I believe that if you want God's blessings in your life, if you want His provision, if you want His just-in-time delivery system, that means that you need to be looking for Him, looking for His guidance, seeking His will, willing to do what He wants you to do. Then the peace will come, because then God will show up. The religious leaders of Jesus' day, they missed the invisible gorilla. Does anybody ever hear of the invisible gorilla test? Nobody ever? Some of you have heard, maybe? Yes, the invisible gorilla test. So guess what? They take the, it's done in Harvard University. It was started there. Psychologists, they take this video, and in the video there's three people with white shirts, three people with black shirts, and the three people are passing a basketball to the other three people. And the survey group, the people that are asked to watch this video, are asked up front, I want you to pay attention to see how many times the people in the white shirt pass the basketball. So the video starts, and there's kind of mayhem that goes on. You know, just the white shirts and the black shirts kind of get mixed up, and the ball's going here and everywhere, and you're trying to count how many times people in a white shirt pass the basketball. In the midst of that mayhem, a guy dressed in a gorilla walks in, thumps his chest, and walks out of the video. After people are done, they're asked first the question, how many times did people with white shirts pass the basketball? And people give their answers. The next question, did you see the gorilla? 50% of the people in the survey groups say yes, and 50% say, what gorilla? Isn't that amazing? Now, Pastor John, what does that have to do with Christmas Eve and a message? I want to be among the 50% that sees the gorilla. In other words, I want to be among those believers that see the hand of God in my life. I want to be among those believers that know He's there leading and guiding, that see the signs, that pick up on the clues that God is at work in my life, because it's then that my peace comes. Can you say amen? It's then that your peace comes. Here's the sign. Jesus, now an adult man, he begins to teach. He begins to tell people why he has come. And people look at the miracles he does, especially some of the big showy ones, like taking bread and multiplying it, and taking fish and multiplying it that they may be fed. And a crowd begins to gather following him. So Jesus, seeing the crowd, he stands up and it's Jews. Now, for those of you that know a little bit about the Jewish culture, they're not allowed to eat meat with blood in it, right? So Jesus, seeing this crowd gathered after he had performed this miracle of the multiplication of the bread and the loaves, he says, "I am the bread of life." He says, "If you want life, you must eat me. My flesh is real bread. My blood is real drink." When he said that, guess what happened? People began to drop like flies, leaving one right after another. That's a hard saying. Who can accept it? Do you know what he was doing? Jesus was sifting the crowd, looking for those who were truly seeking him, not just their next meal. He looks out over the disciples when it's all done. And you know what he says? He says, "Are you going to leave too?" And what do the disciples say? "Where are we going to go? You have the words of life." You know, God is looking for seekers that really want to be with him. And it's those that will see his hand. Amen? You're here tonight and it's like preaching to the choir, right? Because you have taken time out of your busy holiday season and you've come to our candlelight Christmas service. It's a wonderful first step, isn't it? But I pray tonight that you take the next step. I pray tonight that tonight you actually see his hand at work in your life. I pray that you feel his presence so strongly in your life. I pray that when you leave this place tonight, you have a peace of knowing that God is with you. I pray that that worry that you've been thinking about, what am I going to do, just dissolves with the confidence of knowing God is with me. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. God is here. I see his hand. I feel his spirit. I know his love. So we're going to have communion right now, and I'm going to ask the ushers to come. And as we prepare for communion before our last song and before our candle lighting, I pray that you prepare your hearts to receive him anew. Now, for some of you, I know that you accepted the Lord a long time ago. Some others, maybe not so long ago. Maybe there's even one here that has not truly brought Christ into their heart. I pray that this communion is your opportunity to renew that faith or to make it fresh, to feel the presence of God and receive the gift that he gave to you that enables you to be the greatest gift to your family, to your friends. The ushers come.